Hello, my friends, and welcome to the next episode of Just One More Thing. My name is Norgie. Thanks for joining me. Today's episode, I am joined by several of the, we'll call them cast members, leads from Lakeside Players production of Young Frankenstein in Kenosha at the Rohde Center for the Arts. The show is in its second weekend right now. Tickets are $20 for adults, $18 for students, seniors, and veterans. And tickets can be purchased at rohdecenter.org or by stopping at the box office before a show starts. You can come right in and purchase your tickets. And we've got, well, for all intents and purposes, a show tonight at 7:30 and then tomorrow at 2 p.m. And then we've got one weekend left, which is the 8th, the 9th, and the 10th, 7:30 for the 8th and 9th, and a matinee to end the run. So I'm just going to go around, starting with you, China, and everyone can introduce themselves, please, and what role you play in the show.
I'm China Chung, and I play Elizabeth.
You know, I probably should have done this the other way. So let's try this again. China, go ahead and introduce yourself.
I'm China Chung, and I play Elizabeth.
I'm J.T. Walker, and I play Igor.
I'm Alex Ebert, and I'm playing Frederick Frankenstein.
I'm Andrew Hansen, and I play the monster.
I'm Brian Dean, and I play Inspector Hans Kemp.
And I'm Kira Allen, and I play Frau Blücher. Nay. Thank you.
There it is. That'll probably happen a few times in this. So let's talk about, I mean, obviously everyone who is alive probably knows about Young Frankenstein, some fashion or form. Mel Brooks, considered by many to be maybe his greatest movie. You could certainly argue that or argue against it. But any one of you, all of you, what drew you to audition for this show when it was announced?
For me, it was just the fact that I love the movie so much. It's absolutely my favorite Mel Brooks film.
As far as, I mean, have you done this show before?
No.
Okay.
So no, I actually wasn't even familiar with the musical. I just knew the movie really, really well. And so when I found out about, when I decided to audition, that's when I looked up a bootleg copy of the Broadway cast and discovered that it was a really good musical as well.
A legal bootleg, I will add.
Yeah.
Anybody else have a story about why they, you know, wanted to audition for the show? What drew them to audition for the show?
I kind of grew up around it. My dad would quote it incessantly, so, you know, I had to do it for him.
Brian?
So I actually didn't know about Young Frankenstein's existence until it was announced for the season for the Rohde. Looking into it, I saw it was a comedy, and Gene Wilder, I mean, like, everyone loves the guy. And his legacy is unmatched to some, I would say.
Is there anyone who has a bad word to say about Gene Wilder? It feels like he's probably one of those people, like, you can say nothing bad about him.
I mean, Gilda Radner might have during one of their fights.
He ate the last fudgesicle.
But yeah, like, looking into the movie, not having much experience or knowledge about its existence prior, I'm always been interested in comedies of sorts, and considering all the different comedies that we've had here at Lakeside, seeing how the comedy in Young Frankenstein differ from some of the others is that it's a little bit more of dry humor, I would probably say, and opposed to some, like, you know, really extreme humor that you get in other comedies. It's like a whole different scope of acting that you get to pursue, and it was definitely something interesting that I wanted to try, and I think everyone else here has had pretty good experiences with that kind of humor as well, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I'd say Mel Brooks films in general, one of the styles that is so prevalent in them is kind of a straight-faced silliness.
Mm. It's a great way to put it.
A perfect example would be the Pardon Me Boy, Is This the Transylvania Station? Just delivered deadpan straight, but it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and that's a hallmark of many of his movies, as well as like movies like Airplane, where it's played straight, and you find out that the straighter you play something, the funnier it is, because you the comedy's in the writing, not necessarily the delivery. Mm-hmm. So, JT, I want to pick your brain a little bit here. You're new to Lakeside Players. You're new to Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, how long you've been here, sort of your path to Lakeside Players, and also just kind of your theater resume abridged.
Yeah, okay. Well, I grew up, I've only been in Wisconsin for, 4 months now, the beginning of July. I grew up in West Virginia, in Huntington, West Virginia, and I was obsessed with theater from a very early age. I was always doing the community theater shows from about 10 years old on, and then in high school doing the theater stuff there, and then I went to college for theater at Marshall University, the university in Huntington. And then I remembered how much I hated school, so I dropped out of college. And then when I was about 21, I found out about this theater in Columbus, Ohio called Shadowbox. Well, it's now called Shadowbox Live. At the time, it was called Shadowbox Cabaret. But we got tired of everybody thinking we were a strip club. So they changed the name to Shadowbox Live. It was constant. We actually had pins made that said, "We are not a strip club." One time I was on phone reception and I answered a call from a woman saying, "Yeah, I was just calling to see if you guys needed a house mother." I'm sorry, I'm not sure what that is. Oh, you know, just somebody to, you know, pick up the girls' clothes and help them with their makeup. Oh, no, I'm sorry. We are not looking for that position at the moment.
It's been filled.
And, so I worked there in Columbus, Ohio, almost exclusively at Shadowbox, but there were a couple of other theaters in town that I would occasionally take hiatuses from Shadowbox to work with them. But I was there for about 20 years. And then I decided, you know, that's long enough to be doing one thing. And so I thought I'd just throw my lot out there, see what else was out there. I've got a sister who lives here in Milwaukee, and so that helped make the decision of where to go a little easier. And so I moved up. It was a great timing moment because she and her family were out of town for about 2 months in July and August, so I just drove up with a suitcase and my cat and house sat for them while I looked for my own place and a job. And maybe about 2-3 weeks into being there, I got an email from her saying that she'd heard about the audition for Young Frankenstein. And I told her she was a vile temptress of the devil because I had barely gotten here and was not ready to just start doing theater yet until I'd established myself. But said, you know what, screw it. I love the movie. I'm going for it.
Well, I think I speak for everyone involved with this show when I say we're glad that your sister dangled it in front of your face. Well, that sounds wrong.
Yeah,
sorry.
I am like a shiny pair of keys.
I did say I was from West Virginia, so.
We actually hired her to tempt you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
She's on the payroll for sure. I did say I'm from West Virginia.
She's our house mother.
Oh, God. Andrew, let's talk to you for a second.
Howdy.
So you are also new to Lakeside Players.
I am.
JT, who was just talking, plays Igor in the show wonderfully, and then you wonderfully play the monster. It's your first show here, so tell us a little about... Rewind.
Okay.
Tell us a little bit about yourself and sort of your theater resume abridged and how you came to audition for the show.
Sure. So I have done a number of shows up in Racine with the Racine Theater Guild. I took a 17-year... You asked for my history. Why are you shaking your head?
I'm not shaking my head. We'll cut this out in post.
Okay, cool.
Keep going.
Took a 17-year leave of absence from the stage. And it wasn't until my dad tagged me in the post announcing Young Frankenstein on Facebook that I went, that looks like it'd be fun. We should do that.
So you did it.
So I auditioned. I'm wondering what you're playing on the headphones, or if that
I'm not playing anything.
Oh,
no,
from somewhere else.
Yeah, they're singing next door. It's fine.
I need my own headphones.
It's fine.
I need that blocked out.
It's fine.
But yeah, so coming back to the stage has been an amazing experience. I've loved working with everybody here, both here at the table and just here at the Roadie. Very talented people. Thank God you auditioned, JT. I feel you steal the show, and we
Thief.
All are playing to you.
I'll give it back. Don't worry.
Promise.
I'll put it back when it's done. Brian, I worked with you last year. My first directorial show was Charlie Brown Christmas, and you were Charlie Brown.
And what a delightful time it was.
It wasn't. Was that your first show here?
That was my first show here. Okay. It had been many years, like 4 or 5-ish years since I did my last show in high school. Took a break, spent 4 years getting my bachelor's in vocal performance over at Carthage College. And, well, first year out, stuck looking for a job, and I see this audition pop up, and I'm like, okay, let's see if I lost the touch or not. And lo and behold, I'm in now with Young Frankenstein. This is the 5th show I've done in a row this year. So it has been a nonstop grind, but it has been the absolute best time of my life.
It's funny because I don't often see someone walk into an audition and say, he looks like XYZ or she looks like XYZ. But when you walked in the audition, I'm like, this kid looks like Charlie Brown, like he just jumped off the page.
That might have been intentional.
I mean, it worked. Hey, take whatever advantage you can, you know. That's the thing about, I mean, Charlie Brown is a very recognizable face and very youthful face.
To give people an image, just imagine that I had to shave an entire beard off of my face and I had to buzz cut everything down to a quarter inch, if that gives you a better idea of what that would look like.
Hey, you didn't have to shave your head bald and draw a little black squiggly line on the top of your
yeah,
head.
Yeah, thank goodness for that.
China and Kira, you're both sort of the veterans here. China, you've been around for a long time. Kira, you've done a handful of shows here. And either one of you can go first. Tell us about your sort of theater resume and how you've come to be here now for this show.
Yeah, so I think I've been here 12-ish years at the Roadie. And my first show was Into the Woods that Katie Gray directed. Well, Katie Gray and Joe Cardamone directed. And then...
Shout out Joe Cardamone.
Joe Cardamone. But then, yeah, and I was an ugly stepsister in that show, and it was super fun. I did a couple shows after that. Before that, I did some shows in Racine as well. I've been doing community theater since I was about 3 years old. Generational. My parents were involved. My grandparents were involved. It's always been like a family thing. And then took a break, went to college as well, got my degree in vocal performance and music education at Parkside, then started doing some directing here, and then started getting back involved in shows and going to Carthage right now for a master's in musical theater vocal pedagogy, which just means teaching people how to sing musical theater. But, yeah.
Musical theater pedagogy.
It's so fancy.
Kira, how about you?
So I have always loved theater as well, and I actually went to school for it for a bit, and then personal life things happened, and then in like 2018, I decided I needed to be back in theater, so I came here, auditioned and got into Rent, and then I did Rocky Horror, Little Shop, Avenue Q, and now this, and yeah, that's been a lot of fun. I've done a couple of things with the Guild. I do some things around town. I'm a drag performer, actually. I perform under the persona Rainbow. So I do a bit of that. I do a bit of, like, I'll just do kind of like a set once in a while around town. So, yeah. What was the question?
I don't remember anymore.
We actually met during Rocky Horror.
We did, yeah.
That was the first show we did together.
That was what, in 2016? No, 2018. Mm-hmm. 2018, 2019?
19, I believe.
Okay.
Because it was, yeah, it was the year after Rents.
Yeah, it was before COVID, though, that I remember.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Feels like two different worlds now, before COVID and after COVID. Alex, you're the titular character of Young Frankenstein, and you, I mean, you started here, was it last year, a year and a half ago?
I am technically just shy of 2 years here at the Roadie and at any theater ever.
Tell us about your sort of your trajectory towards theater and all the things that you've been doing here.
Yeah, so I have loved theater my whole life. I spent a good majority of my life petrified of performing. I just had this really big blockade in my mind of, like, I'm going to be bad at it. I always got stuck on when I used to do karate as an 8-year-old, and in order to advance through the belts, you have to memorize movement combinations. And I couldn't memorize the movement combinations, so I never got past the yellow belt. And so in my mind, I was always like, well, 2/3 of theater is movement, and I'm just never going to be able to remember all of the movement for a whole show. So I'm not going to get on stage and make a fool out of myself. And then I think literally like the month the pandemic started was when I had signed up for vocal lessons with China. And we did vocal lessons, and that was, I had been singing at karaoke for like maybe a year, 2 years, but before that I had never performed in front of people ever. And a few years later she reached out and was like, hey, we're doing Wizard of Oz here at the Roadie. You should come out and audition. And I gave her the laundry list of excuses as to why I should not come. I don't have a song. I don't know what to sing. I'm going to, oh, no, I can't. No, oh, I'm so sorry. I have work.
And then she threatened your life.
And then, yeah.
And I gave him a song to sing because I knew all the songs he could sing. And yeah. So I said, you're going to be here in 10 minutes. You're going to sing this song, and I'll see you when you get here.
And I
or I will
was.
Kill you.
Yeah. So then I got Cowardly Lion in The Wizard of Oz, and as much of a surprise to myself as to anybody, I wasn't terrible. I picked up on it pretty quickly. And then since then, I've hit the ground running. Basically, in the last almost 2 years, if you've seen anything at the Roadie, I've pretty much had a hand in it in some way, shape, or form, whether it's been the painter or a director or an actor, just in any shape or form, I can get my hands into it. I just am so addicted to the creative process of theater that I
love when you get your hands into it.
Ooh,
sorry.
That's a whole different podcast, Norgie.
Frankenstein. Which director specifically did you put your hand in?
Wouldn't you like to know? Not Let's it. Just say I had to prove I could puppeteer for Avenue Q. JK, JK, love you, Jenny.
yeah. That, yeah.
That was the callbacks.
Yeah.
So, obviously, we talked about this earlier. This is, it's a Mel Brooks intellectual property. So, the producers, Mel Brooks, Young Frankenstein, Mel Brooks, and the list goes on and on as far as movies are concerned. But not all of his movies have been made into musicals, which is kind of a shame because many of them are ripe for musical parody. What are the challenges of bringing this show to the stage, knowing exactly that you have, not necessarily a movie to live up to, but obviously the reputation of the film precedes the show. What are the challenges for you guys as characters in the show to sort of, bring your characters, to life? 'Cause in many cases, the characters have been fleshed out, in the show versus the movie. So, you know, people, obviously there are songs in the movie, but there's a lot of songs in the show. And many of the characters that are smaller characters have bigger roles in the show. So what are some of these challenges for you guys?
I think for this kind of a show that's based on such an iconic movie, I think people are expecting certain things. And for me, Frau Blücher was... She's so different from, like, in the musical from the film. So I'm trying to find the balance between, like, I didn't want to just copy you know, the Cloris Leachman. And I feel like it didn't really translate to who she is in the musical. So trying to find the balance there has been a challenge for me.
Anyone else can go. Yeah, go ahead.
I would say the same. I think Elizabeth is very different from the movie to the musical, and she's got a little more kick to her and a little bit more personality. And, yeah. And she's a little bit more suggestive. And I think that was a challenge for me. I think this is the most suggestive type character I've ever played. So that was definitely a challenge. And the part also is pretty vocally demanding with lots of different colors because she goes from like operatic to full belt to all over the place. And so it was definitely vocally interesting and challenging to play Elizabeth. And I actually didn't think I was going to get Elizabeth. That was a big surprise to me. I was pretty intimidated at first about bringing her to life and kind of embodying that confidence and everything that she has. But it's definitely been a really fun process. I think it's my favorite role I've ever ended up playing.
And we'll talk about the casting process a little bit later, but let's keep diving into this challenges that you guys have had with not living up to, but, you know, living or trying to perform in the shadow of the movie.
Yeah, for me, of course, my role was played by Gene Wilder, whom we've already said is much beloved. And so, fun fact, I've actually still, to this day, never seen the movie all the way through. When I attempted to watch it after being cast, I've seen the musical because I was actually on the play reading committee that helped select this show. So I watched the musical as part of the research for choosing it. But when I went to sit down to watch the movie, it was gone from streaming because there's a rights something going on where yep. Disney removed it from everything. But in a way, I find that to be kind of to my benefit because there's no universe where I think I would ever be able to live up to or be an imitation of Gene Wilder that's in any way like... It'd be like trying to imitate somebody like Robin Williams or Jim Carrey or one of those comedic greats. Like, I'm glad that I don't have that context because I'm not coming into this thinking I'm the Gene Wilder Frederick. I came into this thinking I know enough about Gene Wilder's Frederick to give the essence, but I wanted it to be very much my Frederick. My big challenge with this, A, is... It's vocally demanding, much like Elizabeth. I become very unhinged during certain parts of this show, and it's really helped me discover and unlock a part of my voice that I've never used.
And it's not even in character. You just become unhinged.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a part of my voice that I've never used before, and it's like kind of fun for me to discover a new part of my voice. But two... As a human being, I tend to be the very like lighthearted. I try to do the humor. I try to be the funny one. So to be the quote unquote kind of straight character where all of this craziness is happening to me and I'm kind of there to ground the show sure. a little bit, it's strange for me not to have the punchlines. And sometimes it gets to the point where like I'm standing on stage and I'm like, am I doing enough? Like, am I acting at all? Because I'm just standing here watching this person go crazy around me. But I think that part is necessary because if I was as equally as crazy as like Igor wouldn't have that chance to shine. Igor is supposed to be the crazy thing. And that's been a weird adjustment for me because my instinct is to be, you know, equally silly, rise to the character and do all that extra.
Yeah. Still on the topic of Mel Brooks, are you guys familiar with something called the 2,000-year-old man?
No.
This was a series of recordings, improvised recordings, that Mel Brooks and Carl Reiner made starting in the 60s. And it's just all about Carl Reiner interviewing Mel Brooks. And Mel Brooks would have no idea what character he was supposed to be until Carl Reiner would introduce him. And so when you're first listening to these... It just seems to be all about, oh, Mel Brooks is hilarious. Mel Brooks is giving all of these amazing, zany answers. But the more you really delve in and, like, really, really listen, you come to appreciate the genius of Carl Reiner in just having an amazing chemistry with him and just leading him down these paths and almost kind of, well, really just setting him up and being the straight man character. But it is vital. You couldn't have the humor that Mel Brooks brings without the leading in that Carl Reiner does.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, those two are legendary.
Absolutely.
Writing partners from very long ago. I mean, they both wrote for Sid Caesar and, mm-hmm. and so forth. So, but Andy and Brian and JT, what are the challenges that maybe you have found in trying to bring your characters to the show?
Well, I think going off of what, since both the musical and movie both are written and all the music's composed by Mel Brooks, so with all of his writing in both the movie and the musical, one thing that have found a little bit challenging to maintain is the comedy in itself, because regardless of whether it's in a musical adaptation or a movie, it's Mel Brooks's humor that's supposed to give the show its identity for right. what it is. So alongside being vocally demanding, lots of choreography and movement, while it is different that we have to display the characteristics of these people in the show different from what the actors did in the movie, it does present that challenge in that we need to bring Mel Brooks's comedy out in our own special way, mm-hmm. which is a whole different thing about being our own characters. And, well, I think all of us have found new and inventive ways to make people laugh out on stage, whether that be little improv bits or little bits of ad-libs, things like that. I think there are some experiences that people can talk about that, right?
Yeah, I think also, you know, sort of the theme here is that and I think, Alex, it was you that said this before, you couldn't take the Mel Brooks Young Frankenstein movie and just carbon copy it for the stage, because it doesn't translate the same. You know, obviously, film can be a lot more subtle because you're just watching, you know, this one screen and the actors on the screen. Whereas when you're doing theater, you have to sort of jump off the page and consider the people way back in the auditorium, and they have to be able to see what you're doing with the same energy that maybe the people in the front are seeing it. So, you know, that obviously that's a huge sort of bit of adversity to climb, because you obviously want to live up to it, but also you have to understand that it is different in that respect. So
yeah, especially for a staged adaptation, like some of the bits, like I don't know if it's dipping too much into spoiler territory for the musical adaptation, but there are some bits that happen in the movie that you can't really adapt to the stage,
right?
And that way it has to be rewritten into something that could, you know, feel a little bit more fitting, or something that the audience could appreciate differently in terms of its comedy, but it still fits in the Mel Brooks style.
Andrew, you are playing the monster, played masterfully in the film by Peter Boyle. Tell us about the challenges and you know, bringing that character to the stage.
So I loved Young Frankenstein in my teens. I was terrified of it when my dad first showed it to me. I didn't understand that the black and white film wasn't supposed to be a horror movie. I didn't get a lot of the jokes. It wasn't until I was in high school. Everybody's laughing at me. I love it.
I could just see where you were coming from. Like, I mean, the very first scene in the movie, the pulling the book from the corpse's hands. Yeah. That's actually a little bit scary.
Yeah. So it wasn't until I was in high school that I understood that it was supposed to be funny. And then I like really delved into all of the characters, specifically Marty Feldman and Peter Boyle's Igor and the monster. So feeling already like an outcast because I was like the biggest person in my school and people would make fun of me for that, I related very, very well to the idea of the monster, both in Young Frankenstein and in the actual Frankenstein movie. The one from like the 40s or whatever, where like, you know, everybody's against him. Everybody's kind of pushing him away and pushing against this idea of this created being. In understanding the comedy of Young Frankenstein, though, it wasn't so much that he was an outcast searching for acceptance. He was like a child. He was you know, Frederick's child, and being taught by Frederick, and then later in the movie getting intelligence. It was fun. And seeing that change too, like, I don't think I could live up to Peter Boyle, but I know what he did, and I know what I can do, and I do what I do better than I could do what he did, if that makes sense. There's no way that I will ever be Peter Boyle, but I know that I can be the monster because of my ability as
sure.
an actor.
No, that's fair. That's a great way to look at it. But again, you know, as is the sort of the theme here, you know, no one's trying to, at least in my estimation, trying to carbon copy themselves as the person that's being played in the movie to what they're doing in the show. And I think that everyone here does a fantastic job of bringing their own spin and energy to these characters that are known so well for a film that's 50 years old and still honoring the spirit of what the character is. JT, obviously, you know, and you could argue that any character is the most popular from the movie or whatever, but you could make the argument that it's probably said most about the monster and Igor. But what are some of the challenges that you have faced, obviously, knowing that, like, you know, it's a lot of big shoes to fill, as are any of these roles, but what challenges have you faced with bringing Igor to the stage?
Yeah, exactly. It's walking that fine line, you know, what Brian talked about a little bit on just the difference between film and stage. Being such a big fan of the movie and Marty Feldman in general, I really did want to have slight moments of carbon copying. I really wanted to hit particular, like, even cadences
sure.
on a couple of the moments. Two big examples being the Igor versus Igor moment, mm-hmm. Really trying to recreate his line reading almost exactly, and the brain moment of the Abby Normal. really hit that one, because I knew those would be ones that those are, you know, two incredibly popular quoted moments, and I knew a lot of audience members being really familiar would want to hear that, would want that same. But A, I wanted to make it my own, because it's just no fun otherwise, and B, just the difference between film and stage. You know, Marty Feldman in the movie is very subtle and understated in a lot of his performance, and really pretty snarky throughout in the movie. And that just doesn't read as well on stage.
Yeah.
On stage, everything's got to be bigger. And so where I realized I could create a lot of that bigness was in finding joy, in bringing a lot of joy to the character, and where he does still have those moments of making fun of Frederick, like specifically the quiet dignity and grace moment. At the same time, at least the way I'm trying to play him is still just utterly devoted to him and absolutely in love with him, just having as much childlike fun as possible.
I have to say that is something that has been really fun for me. Like, working on stage with you is A, such an experience, because you and Kira are the two that I struggle the most to not just break out laughing. And the thing is, I am supposed to be the straight man. So to me, this is all supposed to be very like, what the hell? But I'm having the worst time not being like, but it's fun that our dynamic seems to be that, yes, we are kind of devoted to each other, but we will throw each other under the bus at a second's notice. And that is, when I'm about to be hung and you start clapping, and then when when you are trying to stop everybody from hanging me and you're like, it's me, and I'm like, yep, it sure was him. It was him. You should hang him, not me.
Yeah, I guess it just kind of occurred to me. This is a fish out of water story, right? Because, you know, obviously Frederick is trying to step out of the shadow of his lineage. And so now he's going to a place where he's not used to, he's not familiar with. So this is normal to Igor, to Kemp, to Frau. The monster, nothing's normal. And also for Elizabeth, you know, you guys are sort of fish out of water. So it's funny that, yeah, you're the man of science. So everything has a purpose. Everything has to work the way it's supposed to work, and everything is calculated. And then chaos around you.
Yeah.
But I do love that with your interpretation of Igor, there's loyalty, there's well intention. Everything is with good intentions, even where you screw up, you know, the Abby Normal thing and everything else. Everything is well intentioned, even when you you say, oh, it was me who did it, and then, you know, when they say, well, let's hang Igor instead, well, actually, and then you even, oh, sorry, you know, I tried. Everything is well-intentioned. So again, Young Frankenstein at the Lakeside Players Rhodey Center for the Arts is what we're talking about here. I wanted to talk about the audition process. Because you've all auditioned for lots of shows in your own experiences. So what did you feel you needed to do or bring, or what sort of things did you find in the audition process that you thought, you know, this is going to be great for the character, this is going to be great for the show? Just talk about sort of the audition process and getting to the initial steps of the show.
I was terrified. I had signed up for the audition and didn't have a song, hadn't been on stage in 17 years, and wasn't going to come and audition. I, in fact, received a text message, hey, are you on your way? And I went, nope, I'm not doing it. And was like, the Norgy message me back, yes, you are, get your ass here. Just pick a fucking song. Or flipping song. So I don't know. Can we?
It's okay. It's fine.
Okay.
It's not airing in China. It's fine. Wait. That, you know.
I mean, she is sitting very provocatively.
So anyway, continue.
So, I randomly chose the... another character that I feel was an outcast, the Hunchback of Notre Dame, and sang out there, and was terrified the entire time, staring at my phone because I didn't have the lyrics memorized, and I really didn't have to be. I didn't realize until after that, you know, I'm just up there singing in front of my buddy, and if he liked me, he would cast me, and if he didn't like me, I'd get ensemble or kicked out the door. And it wouldn't have been a big deal. And as it turned out, I must have done all right, or I just was the tallest person in the room. one way or the other.
I mean, are there many occasions where you're not the tallest person in the room?
Not lately. I haven't seen Tiny in forever, so.
Fair enough. That's an obscure reference, but yeah, keep going.
Yeah, right. I don't even know who knows Tiny, but.
Tiny Graham?
Yes.
I used to LARP with him.
He is fantastic. I love Tiny. And he is a whole inch taller than I am when we stand up straight.
So three of us know who you're talking about.
Yeah. Deep cut. Cool. I hope that the people listening know who Tiny is. Cool. Otherwise, this
Tiny,
means
if
nothing.
You're out there.
but I am forever grateful for being cast in this show. I got to meet a lot of very unique, interesting people that I want to do many, many more shows with moving forward. And I found a new home here at the Rhodey. And hopefully, you know, it's not just going to be on stage where you can see my handiwork. That sounds really
I left that one alone. Yeah.
There goes the church crowd.
I came into this when I was doing the research for play reading. I remember watching it and being like, you know, Igor is the big character, but for me, first and foremost, I like to think of myself as a singer, and I was just so excited to hear Frederick's songs, because he has some very, very good songs in this show. So I came in like dead set on wanting to be Frederick. And I had the benefit last year of having been in Monty Python's Spamalot, which is British Mel Brooks. And so I believe I just came in and I did my song because I was Sir Robin in Spamalot, and I sang You Won't Succeed on Broadway. And I was pretty confident in my audition. I was not prepared for how intense the callback was going to be. And I remember I made a comment after the fact when you, JT, got up and Natalie, we had three songs we had to prepare, and Natalie kind of let us pick the song that we would perform at the callback, and each person's choice kind of indicated what character they were most going towards. So when you got up and Together Again started, I was like, oh, thank God he's not going for Frederick. And then you killed it, and I was like, oh, thank God he's not going for Frederick. Because if he had been going for Frederick, I would not be sitting at this table right now.
I was crying.
Thank God you
Well, here's the thing. I was very interested in either Igor or Frederick. Those were the main two things that that I was interested in for the show. And the initial, what it said to prepare, I either read it wrong or I don't know, but it said a song and a monologue. So I had actually prepared my song. I sang a snippet of the Universe song from Monty Python, Meaning of Life, which I figured would be, you know, pretty telling of Igor. But for my monologue, I was going to do a Dr. Frankenfurter monologue when he's bringing Rocky to life, which I figured would be very, very much like Frederick. But then you didn't have us read the monologues. So,
yeah, I think you may have read that wrong, because I don't, I mean, maybe, but I don't remember if I don't think I put monologue in the
really
monologue.
All right.
Call.
Maybe I just it's an extra in my brain.
And maybe if this would have been like a straight show, maybe a monologue. But I felt like coming in and singing in front of people you don't know is nerve wracking.
Oh, absolutely.
And certainly, I would have been more than happy to let you do the monologue, but it really wouldn't have.
For me, this is a straight show.
And you're doing a fantastic job fooling everyone.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm going for my second award-winning straight man award.
Ladies.
I actually was in the same boat as Andrew, and I think I messaged you too. And I was like, hey, so never mind. I wasn't going to come out. I was really excited because it was the only opportunity I was going to have this year to be in a show. And I really was interested in doing a more adult show, because most of the shows that I've directed or I've been in have been more Disney or kid-friendly. Yeah. And so I was drawn to the fact of getting to do something that was maybe a little more risque and, like, have a little bit more fun with grown-ups with not having kids around all the time. So that kind of drew me to it, and just having that opportunity to perform again. And then I got scared. And I was like, hey, yeah, no, no thanks.
I was just, like... There were so many people who messaged me, and they were like, oh, I don't know. Like, I don't think it can do this. And I almost got the feeling like there was this rumor going around that I was going to cook everyone up and eat them if they didn't do a good job. And I was like, no, just show up. Just sing. Like, all you got to do is, like, yeah. You perform in front of people all the time. This is less people than that. But why do we get in our heads like that? that when there's 300 people in the room, no problem. Mm-hmm. No problem. We'll go yeah. out there and we'll sweat our asses off. But when there's three people in the room, it's like...
I think it's because you go into that situation knowing that those people are picking you apart.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes. When you're in front of an audience, you've had 2 months to prepare. This is basically just a muscle memory exercise at that point. But when you're going in and you have this hope for, I want this character, and you know that that person sitting across the table is the doorway between you and that character you want, it is nerve-wracking, especially if you have that preconceived, yeah. I want this specific role in your head. Mm-hmm. I don't experience that, but I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
What about you? What about you, Kira?
So I researched, because I always loved the movie, so I researched the musical, and immediately I wanted Frau, because she's basically she's just... I didn't even say the whole thing, but that's okay. She's basically a drag queen, and I needed to sing that song, basically. So I went into it, and I actually sang Privilege to Pee, and I did it as...
Yeah, you did. I remember that.
And I just did it as big as I could and as drag as I could, and I guess you liked it, so...
I guess. I think... It's fun to see people, no matter how experienced they are, or lack thereof, when they come into an audition and they try to put their best foot forward, and you know everyone's nervous, but as many auditions as everyone at this table has done, you're still here. Nobody's killed you. No one has hit you in the face with a giant fish. Like it's. That's part of the process. And we look back and I
was that an option?
Yeah, it was.
Different
it was.
Show.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, PETA. So yeah. I mean, it was an intense process. But I think that with sort of the pressure cooker, and maybe that's overstating it, but I feel like it brought out the best in people, and I wanted there to be competition in the room. Not necessarily cutthroat competition, but I wanted someone who was maybe interested in a part that, like, oh, this person's doing it on stage. Now I know I have to raise my game. Mm. Like, if that's my competition, I know I have to step it up. And I think that it brought out the best in people. And I certainly think it has shown in the performances and the qualities and the how much people care about what they're doing in the show. What has been your favorite experiences or experience with this show so far throughout the whole process? Whether it doesn't have to be during the performances, but throughout this entire process, what's been your favorite experience?
One thing, and then I gotta go get my makeup on.
Oh, thank God.
I figured I'd be relieved. Literally, the camaraderie. Being able to meet everyone in the cast and feeling like this is actually a close-knit family, whether it was JT and I connecting at callbacks or how we all have grown into one family. I mean, that's really the best word I have for it. All the hard work that we put in together, all of the not notes that we've given to each other, but suggestions along the way. And it doesn't feel like anybody's trying to direct anybody else. It feels like we are actors giving actors ideas, and then we like build off of them ourselves, and then we just come up with funnier things. Also, just watching JT perform has been amazing. You are hilarious. You are also fantastic, the way that you let everything just hit you and you're rolling with it, Alex. You've been great. My favorite bit actually is Kemp's hand in our fight, where I get to rip it off and go, oh geez, that's not right, and I throw it, throw it back to them. I'm like, what is this? But
we came with that up with like the week before. It was hilarious thinking that we just put a glove over a fake hand. It's like, all right, let's see if it works.
Yeah.
And on that note, actually, Brian, the amount of forethought that had to go into all of your deliberate movements with your fake prosthetics, really just amazing work.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, it's like we had to really think about how we were going to approach it with the arm, because I wanted to keep it as, well, accurate to the movie as possible. That was kind of what I wanted to try and copy over. And, yeah, seeing how that it had its own challenges, both in dancing, because Kemp has a fake leg to also work with as well. Doing that with all the dances and stuff like that, I'm just like, okay, I'm going to milk this dry. So we had to hotkey the sound effect anytime I do this, and we have it like running 8 or 9 times throughout the show.
It's actually pretty fascinating, because some of those cranking or ratchet sound cues are built into the tracks, and you know the timing so well. It's alarming how well you have it timed, because most people would have to, you know, really, really work at it, but you do it so naturally. So it's really cool to see you go through the music almost like you could do it in your sleep.
It's for the comedy. Got to play up the comedy, you know.
What about others' favorite moments through the process?
For me, it's just been working with this cast. I mean, it would be a fun show to do anyway, I'm sure, but just the level of talent and humor, and just I really think we're constantly building on each other and playing off of each other, and that's been a lot of fun to do.
Yeah, for sure. I also have really enjoyed, like, of course we had the standard musical directing team where we had a choreographer and we had a music director and all that, but the amount of kind of autonomy we've had as a cast to figure out our own bits. And like, so like, for example, JT and I basically choreographed together again ourselves, and it gave us a chance to kind of bond and figure out our dynamic that we were going to carry through the rest of the show.
Sure.
And then like Inga and I got to do Roll in the Hay together. So we got to kind of set our tone for what our relationship was going to be in the whole show. And it's very cool, because in most other shows, you would be handed blocking or you would be handed choreography and told to memorize this. It's a very cool experience to be able to set your own tone for how this is going to be, and like create your own movements and create your own workable moments that, you know, grow and evolve and then carry through the rest of the show.
Well, it certainly adds that dynamic, especially between Frederick and Igor, that, like, you know, that the two of you are obviously, you don't know each other, but that you're going to be building a partnership that will work over the course of the show, and that, you know, that it sort of works in that way that you are, you know, dancing in lockstep with each other.
Yeah, we had a discussion just before choreographing it where we both had kind of agreed, like, we wanted it to feel very buddy cop. The song itself lends itself to a very buddy cop moment, so we wanted our movements to be in sync, like we were two people who had known each other forever, even though we met 12 seconds ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's got a very Laurel and Hardy feel to it. It's just very, very vaudevillian, very slapstick. Anybody else want to share their favorite experiences at the show?
I think one of my favorite experiences is actually getting to be on stage with you, Alex, and like go from seeing you like the first time I had you in voice lessons, and how you had like this kind of question mark above your ability and like what you could do, and you just weren't quite sure like where you fit in yet. And then to see you grow from like that person to this like, I'm going to get Frederick, or I'm going to scalp people. like, you know, and then like to see the confidence and to see you like not only get the part that you wanted, but, you know, front, like, headline a show and stay in there in the ring with people who have been doing this, like, their whole lives. And, like, I don't think one person in the audience would ever think that you're only 2 years deep into this, you know, against everybody else on the stage who's been doing this for longer. I don't think anybody would ever have that thought in their head. And so it's a really fun experience when I get to come out and look at you and act with you and see those things. And, like, for me, that's, like, one of my favorite moments of the entire show, is just getting to be on stage, because now we've directed each other, we've been in lessons together, we've done everything except for actually be in a show together. So for me, it's kind of like a full circle moment of, and like getting to see you shine and then also enjoying it with you has been really fun.
Yeah, and it's kind of full circle, since the beginning of our friendship happened during the pandemic where we weren't allowed to touch each other.
Yeah, please don't touch me.
And now in the show,
that's
I'm not allowed to touch you.
Yeah, like thinking back to like those first few lessons and things like that, like I would have never in a thousand years thought like, oh, I'm going to play this guy's fiance in a Mel Brooks show in just a couple years from now.
You and me both.
Yeah.
Because when I started lessons, I still at that time had no idea that I would ever actually be on stage. I had wanted to, and it had been like this huge dream of mine, but I still had that voice in my head that was just, you're not good enough for this. You're not going to be good at this. You're going to look like a fool, and not in the way that you usually like to look like a fool. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate you giving me that push to get out on stage, because now we do get to have this moment.
Mm-hmm. JT, I'll give you the last word here. What's been your favorite experience through this process? You know, and obviously as a reminder that you're new to this theater, and so you've brought a very fun energy, not only to the stage, but also to you're very well regarded and liked throughout the cast and crew and anyone who's met you. So well, what's been your favorite experience with the show so far?
Well, you know, copying what Andrew said, the camaraderie has been amazing. I instantly felt welcomed and that I could simply present myself, and that I would be accepted for who I was and not have to put on any sort of mask. But I've also very much enjoyed the almost immediate trust and freedom I was given to... there have been some ad-libs that I have been officially... allowed to present, giving a different line every night for the Cain and Abel, and that's been a really fun thing, because it's got me thinking about the show when it's not showtime, because I'd love to say that all of those ad-libs have been absolute instantaneous off the cuff and that I'm brilliant, but no, a lot of
They're all hilarious.
Well, thank you.
Absolutely hilarious.
But, you know, just I'll be at my day job and my mind will wander from what I'm doing and start thinking about, you know, oh, what would this line work? Oh, would this be funny? And so it keeps me thinking about the show, even in the times when I'm not here.
I have to say, I've gotten to the point where I know your ad-lib parts, and I specifically stop listening to you just before that, because if I listen to what you've just said to me, I have like a canned facial expression because I know it's going to be something ridiculous. So I just wait till you're done doing that line, and I just make my canned facial expression. But I did not actually hear what you said until I go off stage and I like process in my brain, like the one you said yesterday about fact checking.
Yeah, that's
I hilarious. Didn't laugh until I went off stage, and I was like, "Oh my god!"
Well, the show is Young Frankenstein. This is the second weekend. Tickets are on sale at roadiecenter.org. You can come to the box office before a show starts. Buy tickets at the door. Tickets are $20 for adults, $18 for students, seniors, and veterans. It's not a family show. There is a lot of adult content, so take that into consideration if you're considering bringing your young ones. There's some adult content that you want to be aware of, and it's not for the maybe not for the conservative crowd. Also, there's a lot of strobe lights and loud noises. So if you're sensitive to noise and that kind
fog.
Of
fog,
yes, and fog. You might want to consider that as well. So my thanks to China, who plays Elizabeth, JT, who plays Igor, Alex, who plays Frederick, Andrew, who had to take off, who plays the monster, Brian, who plays Kemp and 85 other characters. And I mean, it's true. And Kira, who plays Frau.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
Look.
There we go.
Thanks to everyone for listening again. RoadieCenter.org. I got to let these kids go get their makeup and costumes on. But thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.